All right, welcome to Boredom Busters, sixth grade math.
Let's see here. Open your books to lesson 29. Oh, you know what? This is a review. You should know what you're supposed to do. You can go back to your desk. Right. Thank
you. You leave the books up here. It's fine.
All right, class. Who's ready for balloon day? Now, this is the way Balloon Day works. Those of you who got ping pong balls, if you can score a basket, you get to pop a balloon. You may start throwing ping pong balls right now. Miss, come on. You got to... anybody score a basket? Then you guys get to keep throwing the ping pong balls. Someone has to score a basket before you get to pop the balloon. Would you please, someone? We need Paul Bear in here, somebody who can dunk. It's too far back?
Hold your head up.
Okay.
Got one.
John got one in, so he gets to pop the balloon. All right, John, you may pop the balloon. He did an excellent job.
Let's see what this piece of paper says.
Oh, I'm leaving. All
right. That's okay. It says, time to go home. Okay. Those were two opposite extremes, neither of which belong in a classroom. Right? If you have a class like I had a class, your students will be bored. If you intend for every school day to involve throwing ping pong balls and popping balloons, your students will be nervous wrecks. They may be having lots of fun, but chances are they won't be learning very much. All right? What is a child's definition of boredom? Well, I asked my students last school year after I was told I was supposed to have this topic, and their answer was, when I don't have anything to do. I said, I can take care of that! But I think it went a little bit beyond that. It's when the thing I'm doing becomes so repetitious that it's not fun anymore. You know, Mr. Uwe talked about learning how to drive. How much fun that was when he was 5, and how he got a CDL when he was 19. And now driving is just, I don't think, if you said, Uwe, you may go drive your van around the parking lot if you want to. He's not going to go racing out there. Now, if I told Grant in the back here that he may go drive my van around the parking lot, he would probably be out of this room like that, because he doesn't get to drive my van very much. He'd probably rather drive his dad's truck, but you get the point. A task, when we do it too many times, becomes repetitious and it's no longer exciting. Something else has to take place. So, the goal of this topic is to point out trouble spots that teachers will face in the classroom and also to propose realistic remedies. One of the things that I think we face as teachers in trying to keep things from getting boring is what is appropriate. What are some principles that guide that should make that we should use to keep us from having a ping pong ball balloon day on a regular basis? Or are there principles that guide that? What's appropriate for a teacher to use in the classroom? What is a classroom supposed to do? What's supposed to happen in a classroom?
Learning.
So if it's educational. Now, I could argue that throwing ping pong balls at a basket on my head could be educational in that you're learning a skill to aim and so on, and I'm learning how to hold still, whatever, and all that. But it needs to be educational. Anything else? Miss Cassie teaches in a lower grade classroom, and I think Ryan teaches in an upper grade classroom. Would it be appropriate for them both to use the same methods? I see heads shaking. Why not? age level. We need to make sure so that it's educational, age appropriate. And there's one other thing that I've actually experienced in my own classroom. Some of you who've taught a little while may have as well. What does the teacher need to be careful not to do?
You don't want to lose order.
Don't lose order. The teacher needs to maintain their role as the teacher, order. You should not lower yourself to the child's level or below. I'm not necessarily always a good example of that. I do try. But the teacher does need to maintain order. If whatever you're doing to break the monotony of doing another lesson in fractions, diagramming, whatever it is, if it causes your room to dissolve into chaos, it was counterproductive that they weren't bored, but neither were they learning. So, three overarching principles are: it needs to be educational, it needs to be age appropriate, and it still needs to maintain an orderly classroom. The takeaway for today is that students who face challenges and experience success will not be bored. I have a friend who bought a Mini Cooper, and they're kind of neat looking little cars, you know, unique design and whatever, and built by BMW, I believe. So I asked him, "How do you like your Mini?" He said, "I really enjoy it. It handles great and everything, but I've been disappointed. It doesn't take off as fast as I think it ought to. It's kind of gutless." Right. His expectations weren't met. When your students walk into the classroom, they have expectations. One of the expectations that your students have is that they expect you to challenge them in some way, or their intellect to be challenged. A first grader does not want to show up for school the second day and learn apple again. They're ready for bear, all right? The students want new material. They want to be challenged on a daily basis, but they don't want it to be so challenging that they feel like there's no possible way I'm ever going to accomplish this. That first grader does not want to show up for school the second day and have you say, "All right, and now we're learning algebra." Okay. That's not going to be productive. So, no student wants to be ignorant, but neither do they want you to tell them what you told them yesterday, unless they forgot it already. And everyone wants to be able to win. How many of you like playing Monopoly? Anybody? Okay, I would venture to say that the people who don't like playing Monopoly usually lose. People like to do things that you can win. I want to succeed, right? Well, if I feel like there's no possible way I'm going to win that game, I don't like it. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to play with you. You've heard that before, all right? Just a few verses in the Bible that I think apply to this topic specifically. They're taken from Colossians 3, starting in verse 22. It says, "Servants, obey in all things your masters according to the flesh, not with eye service as men pleasers, but in singleness of heart, fearing God. And whatsoever you do, do it heartily, as to the Lord and not unto men, knowing that of the Lord ye shall receive the reward of the inheritance, for ye serve the Lord Christ." Now that word singleness in the first verse that I read there means actually sincerity. And I like the fact that it says sincerity, not sobriety. I'm not so good at sobriety. I can be sincere, but the long face doesn't fit all the time. I'm not related to my local donkey. But your students, if you're doing things to keep things lively in the classroom from a sincere desire to better their lives, they know that. They get that. And do remember that the people who gave you the job of teaching in the classroom got the authority to give you that job from God. And that God is watching your classroom. And so what happens in there should be ultimately God-honoring in the end. All right. I am looking forward to the rest of this topic because I intend for you to be helping me. All right. I want to have some discussion. I told you a few things, but question one, what do our students expect when they come to school?
To be challenged,
definitely. Any other expectations that they have? If you don't meet their expectations, they are going to start feeling bored. They will be disappointed in you. Any other expectations that students have?
The children, they expect to have fun.
They expect to have fun. They want you to be an interesting, dynamic speaker. Or, you know, at least to do enjoyable things on a regular basis in the classroom. Anything else?
They expect you to be in charge.
They expect you to be in charge. Students, I can remember coming to school one day, and my teacher telling us at the beginning of the day, today's free day, you can do whatever you want. And we thought, this is great! Ah, yeah! We're in charge! We got this whole thing under control! And about 2 hours later, we were so worn out with being in charge of ourselves. I was sick of it. I was like, can't you just give us some math to do or something? You know, not really, but I was ready for my teacher to be in charge again. It wasn't as fun as it sounds. Anything else? The student expectations. They're important. This is an important thing to have in your mind prior to trying to keep things interesting. If not, how many of you, when you were in school, sat in a class and felt bored? Very good. Okay. What subjects did you consider the most boring? Just go ahead and tell me.
Math.
Math, English, okay.
Science.
History, science. Really? What else? Reading. Any other subjects?
Art.
Anybody bored in spelling class? Okay. What about music? Not that many. Okay. What about Bible? Did you ever feel like you were just doing another Sunday school lesson? Okay. Any other subjects that you feel like people find boring? There's one more. That shouldn't be, but I find it happening.
From personal experience, I'd say Bible memory.
Bible memory.
That can get a bit boring.
It can get boring. Okay. We need to recognize the things that people find boring. If we're going to, along with that, how many of you ever sat through a boring devotional? How many of you admit to having a boring devotional? These are Christian schools. The devotional period is supposed to be the life in the classroom. It's what sets the tone for the day, and it's boring. What are the students going to expect to come after that? Not much, right? Okay. What are some times during the school year or during school days that students are prone to become bored? That's question number 3, in case you're watching. When you went to school. Go ahead.
February.
Okay. February is boring.
Afternoon.
Got a full tummy. You just got done with recess. And
yeah.
After any recess. Okay. Very good. Do you remember the child's definition of when you get bored? Did you ever get bored when you had spare time? I already read all the books. I don't want to look at the encyclopedia again. The dictionary is definitely not an option. <You know? laughs> So, can't spare time get pretty boring? I know it does. Okay. What about rainy days? Can those become boring? Here in the West Coast, you can end up having, you know, nothing but rainy days, sometimes for long periods of time. What about those days when everyone shows up doing this? And you're working, and a little bit later, can this get a little bit dreary? Especially when it's the teacher. It's kind of hard to keep the fire in the pulpit when that happens, you know? All right. Any other situations, times in the classroom that you remember from being a student or that you've experienced as a teacher that that people find boring. We want to identify what needs fixing before we start getting the tools out. Okay.
Reviews.
Thank you. Reviews can definitely be boring. And many of them, I would venture to say, are bigger than they ought to be. And students can become rather bogged down, and I'm doing what I already know how to do, and I have to do a whole bunch of it. Just give me the test and get it over with, right? So we're going to need to find a way to fix that too. Anything else?
A long teacher lecture.
All right. Derek wants to have a chance to talk. I'll try to give you plenty. Okay. But no, definitely. A teacher standing up droning on for 45 minutes gets rather boring. After a while, it becomes pretty easy to tune them out and look out the window and see what's happening out there. Right? One thing I found in many classrooms is classes with fast and slow students. Class time, when I get past the point that the fast students have got, they understand the concept, they quickly become bored. And poor Sally over here, who doesn't get it, is not bored, but she's frustrated because everyone else is still waiting on her. And I would like to give some instructions on what you can do when that happens to take some pressure off and keep things. It's okay sometimes for the fast students to learn some patience too. But, all right. Any other boring events?
Unorganized recesses.
I would agree with that. They can become boring. Although sometimes students can find enjoyable things to do. Not every moment of a student's activity at school needs to be directed by the teacher, but it should all be supervised, if that makes sense. All right, the fun part. Things to do. What can we do to deal with these boring teachers? First thing, we're supposed to be educators, right? How can we prevent class time from being boring? Come prepared. A prepared teacher is very seldom a boring teacher.
One thing I like to do in science and history class, and I even try to do it sometimes in English and math, but the harder it is, I have a projector in my classroom and show pictures.
Okay. Show pictures. Pictures worth 1,000 words, right? All right, now that he mentioned that, I get to show you a picture. Right. And it's too small for most of you to see, but this was an event that took place in my classroom the first year. Y'all can just pass it down there. It definitely helped keep a class time interesting. We were studying reptiles, by the way, when that took place. So, very good. Other things that keep class interesting.
I like to use examples during class time.
Mm-hmm. Yes, so use examples involving the students' names or people they know. I find that an excellent way to build respect for their parents or ministers and so on. Use them in an upbuilding way, definitely.
As far as reviews, I have used, I put it on the students, so I'm up front moderating it, but I have the students ask, the whole room, they ask some questions and they'll reply.
Okay.
And it puts... That way, I can get a little glimpse into what they know and what they don't know about
mm-hmm.
the test.
Very good.
It's fun for them. It's interactive.
Yeah, yeah. I agree with that. And this is something that I do quite often when we come in from recess time. Everyone's sweaty. I really don't want them touching these nice school books and so on. And many times we're starting a new period, so we might be studying English now. We're shifting gears. And quite often, the review at the beginning of each student's lesson, they tend to be redundant. You might ask fourth grade, what is a noun? You ask fifth grade, what is a noun? You ask sixth grade, what is a noun? And by the time you get to the seventh graders, they're walking up to the table, a noun is a person, place, thing, or idea. Right? They already know what's coming. And so instead of breaking everyone up and reviewing each class as they come to the class table, I will review with everybody. For example, what is the capital of the state of Oregon? Capital of the state of Idaho? Capital of New Hampshire? Thank you. All right. Actually, that's Connecticut, by the way. We had his attention, right? So we keep things going on. It's also okay sometimes to intentionally say something wrong because your students' brains immediately fire. Nope. That's not right. All right. Very good. Anything else that can help keep class time interesting?
I did this one time. I'm still not quite sure if it stayed within the orderly part of it, but we were studying World War II.
Mm-hmm.
And I told my students how that on the West Coast, schools practice blackouts.
Mm-hmm.
I pulled out a roll of black garbage bags and I said, I'm going to time you. You just go see how fast you can get those windows taped.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you how far away the planes had been spotted, but you survived or not.
Mm-hmm. Very good. So practicing a blackout.
And then just for the anyhow, we left those bags on the windows the rest of the day.
Okay. Very good. Very good. What about speed drills? I find this rather rewarding. You have a minute to get something done, or 2 minutes, whatever. And when you're done, you're finished. So you have an intense dive in, and then you're done. And so on your handouts, I gave you a speed drill. So those of you who have a speed drill, some of you may not have been fortunate enough to get one, you're going to have 1 minute to complete as much of that speed drill as possible. All right. Those of you that have speed drills, you have them turned up. Okay, I want you to hold your pencils up in the air like this, and you're gonna shout as loud as you can. Let's go! Okay?
Let's go!
Alright, go. All right, time's up. Was that boring for those of you who had them? No, not. How about for those who didn't have them? It was actually kind of fun to look around and watch the others. I don't know. Anyway. But giving your students that kind of thing, and that's one thing that I'll occasionally do with the review even, is tell the students, we'll do the first part of the review in class, orally, or I'll time you, you do as much as you can, and when we're done with that, that part's over. Students feel relieved, no longer bored. When that happens, it's okay to create a little bit of competition in your classroom. All right, so who can spell bureau? We're going to give this side of the room a chance and this side of the room a chance. Okay, so here we go. Anybody? Go ahead.
B-U-R-E-A-U.
Excellent. Okay, you guys lose. All right. All right. And now, who can spell Czechoslovakia? Go ahead.
C-Z-E-C-H-O-S-L-O-V-A-K-I-A.
Okay, you guys are going to have to pick this up a little bit. All right. Okay. And now, who can spell camouflage? Go ahead.
C-A-M-O-U-F-L-A-G-E.
Thank you. Very good. All right. But some competition, then, you know, the students working together to try to win something. That can be fun. You can turn class time into a game. For example, the game of Buzz, right? The game of Buzz is very simple. You choose something that you can't say, and so you have to say Buzz when we get there. So we'll say the alphabet, but you have to say Buzz for all the vowels, all right? So I'll start, and then Andy, you'll be next. And if we come to a vowel, you say the word Buzz, and then the next person can say the next letter. That make sense? All right, so here we go. Buzz.
E, C, D. Buzz.
H.
J. O. M. N.
O. Okay, but that's fun because everybody's listening to see if someone else is going to mess up and you're thinking, what's the next letter? It's okay. Those are fun. One thing that I have done to help keep reading classes interesting, and obviously I'm not completely done because it was one of my students who said they aren't, and that's to play a game we call stop. And to do that, you just simply have them start reading, and the next person has to, when I say the word stop, the next person starts, and you might stop at people in the middle of a sentence. We're going to use counting to do this just to be an example, so we'll start with you. You'll just count starting from 100, and we're going to be counting backwards, okay? And when I say stop, the next person has to pick up the number and just keep going immediately. No, try to keep no stopping in between. I mean, no pause. All right? You ready? Go ahead. Stop. Keep going, keep going. Stop. Stop. All right, and so on. Everyone has to keep up with this thing or you'll be caught, looking rather unintelligent. So you can play this game also by saying people's names. All right, so I'm going to have to pick on people who I know their names in this room, and we'll start counting once again with Austin, and you'll be starting, and we'll count by twos. All right, and you start with the number zero. All right, so when I say someone's name, you have to pick up and take off. This is actually a little worse for people because everyone has to be paying attention, or else I say your name and you're looking like the deer in the headlights. So go ahead, Austin.
0, 2, 4, 6, 8, 10.
Jaden.
14, 16, 18, 20, 22, 23.
Derek.
28, 30, 32, 33.
Ryan.
38, 40, 42, 44, 45.
Cassie.
48, 50, 52, 54, 56.
Grant. 60, 60, 60, 60, 60. Thank you. Thank you. You all did excellent. But nobody knows, those of you who were hoping maybe I didn't know your name. But in your classroom, your students all know that you know their name and that you could pick on them at any moment here. Something else that some of the teacher's guides have actually even given to keep reading class specifically interesting, when you have a story that has a lot of dialogue, have the students choose a character. And they only read when it's that character. And they're supposed to project that character's voice. So if it's an old grandma, then they should try to talk like a grandma when we get there, and so on. That can keep it from being just the redundant reading by paragraphs, which is the worst possible way to have a reading class. It is okay, occasionally, I think, in class time, to act. Not everyone maybe has this talent. I don't know if it's a talent. Maybe it's more like a malady. But occasionally it's okay to get involved and get so carried away with your story that you actually end up doing it. For example, do you all like the story of David and Goliath? Who is David? He's a little guy, right? David was about your size. And he had that sling. He swung that thing around. He went, and it took off, and it went flying, and I think an angel came up behind it and was pushing it really hard. And then it hit Goliath in the head. Boom, and he fell! Right? My students love it when that happens. They can hardly wait! It's okay. That's an educational moment. From now on, they will always picture Goliath as looking like me. Anyone have any trouble having English class interesting? Yes? What do you do to make English class interesting? I think it's one of the more challenging ones. But I think there are many ways to make it interesting. How do you do that?
You stick figures on the board.
Stick figures! Using diagrams to show things. So, for example, there you go. English becomes a little more interesting. John's one ankle's a little twisted there. It's okay. One thing I found with them in the upper grades, often we're asking students to write. And yeah, he is. Giving them a timed composition is often, and once again, it's a relief. A good writer should be able to write a page every 7 minutes. Typically, I'll give my students about 12 for a page. Occasionally, I'll tell them we want to, you know, at least a decent story, and I'll have 20 minutes to finish. But seldom, if I'm timing them, will I give them more than that to write a comprehensive story. And it is amazing the things that they're capable of coming up with in that period of time. Now, normally, I do try to get them fired up about what they're writing about prior to that. But there is something relieving about knowing that I only have to live through this for X amount of minutes. I can bear with that, you know. It's kind of like, you know, mountain climbing. I can make one more step type of thing. Your students, you want to do that. And along with timing things, occasionally, as we're getting close to recess time, or maybe you're looking at the clock hoping I'll get done soon, you tell your students, okay, let's see how much you can get done in the next 5 minutes or whatever. Or might even give them several problems to say, can you finish this before recess? And it makes that short period of time before recess, rather than them sitting there, it's almost around the one more time, actually working. Remember, the student needs to be getting challenged as well as feeling success. Those are the two things that are really going to make the class keep going. What about spelling words? How do you keep spelling class interesting? Just read off the words. Fifth grade, camouflage. Sixth grade, bureau. Eighth grade, whatever. That sounds pretty interesting, right? Danny has a...
I had kind of interesting this year. I was a little bright spot in my brain for once, I guess. I used like all the words and put them in a story.
Yes.
And the students are just like, they just kind of wait till like how this thing is going to end
up. Yeah.
You know, the stories get very absurd until you're done, but.
Of course, of course.
It keeps them jolly, and it's surprising how much they actually look forward to
this. Yes.
But, I mean, spelling tests.
Yes. I try to do that when I can and find it to be rather engaging.
It's good for me because I got to like, it's a good activity for my own brain.
Yeah. You have to be creative along with that. Very good. So turning the spelling words into a story. I find that to be rewarding as well. One other thing, remember that students want to be challenged, and quite often students don't feel challenged by spelling tests. Particularly your faster students are ready to spell the words before they come to the testing time. And because of that, I've started giving my students challenge words. And they're typically 4 to 7 words that they don't get to study prior to the spelling test, and they'll observe some type of rule. Such as I might give them bureau, chateau, and words like that. And at first, the students are hearing these words and wondering, how do I spell them? How do I spell them? And one of them clicks, and all of a sudden, they start erasing them and getting it right. And I give them extra points if they get those words right. But it gives them something to look forward to, and they often are kind of disappointed if we get to the end of the spelling test, and they say, no challenge words? Well, sorry. I didn't spend my quality time with my dictionary today. Something else that little children, even the big children, can find rewarding. I saw very few hands go up when I asked if you thought music class was boring. It's very good. Children learn things by singing them, right? A, B, C, D, so on. All right, so some of you have a copy of this song. Mr. Kyle gave me this several years ago, and I really enjoy it. Are there enough? Some of you that don't have copies, I'll try to pass some out here. All right. And to observe one other thing, I'm going to have you all stand up to sing this. All right. We'll just sing verse 1 here and learn about nouns. Let's see, I do have another copy here. Oh, let's look around for some naming words for persons and places and things. Oh, a noun is a name, yes, a noun is a name for a person or a place or a thing. It's a noun, it's a noun, it's the name of anything. Any persons, any places, anything from hats and laces, it names persons and places and things. You may be seated. Isn't that much more engaging than a noun is the name of a person, place, thing, or idea? All right. And so it's okay to make a song out of something and try to learn it that way. I think we're going to move on to question 5. How can we fulfill student expectations during spare time? So students want to be challenged, and they want to experience success when they have absolutely nothing to do. How's this going to happen? How do you deal with that in your classroom?
I had something for them to work on when they got done with their work.
Something for them to work on when they got done with their work.
Okay,
that sounds very exciting. Memorizing the Morse code and then building a telegraph and telegraphing messages. Very good.
Similar, I had a teacher who had extra subjects for us to work on when we got done, so you could do a language study or maybe social studies, extracurricular of some kind.
Okay.
Doing an extra course.
An extra course in something, was that something you chose to do or something he directed you to do? Okay.
It's kind of up to our own pace.
All right. So it was optional, but there were other courses you could take.
Right.
So you could still challenge yourself and...
That's right. You can have a Latin course or Spanish course.
Okay.
Or, yeah, CLE courses, and we work through Latin.
Mm-hmm. So language courses such as Latin and Spanish and so on. Very good. Any other ways to keep students challenged during spare time? Wow.
And then they also had, the teacher had an old remote control thing that didn't work, and we took the top off and the big wheels, and we put a board on it and rigged up a little motor and stuff. Same type of deal with remote that you could, wasn't wireless, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
It worked. It was kind of fun.
So basically building some little mechanical gizmos that kept you occupied and you were able to have fun with. Yeah.
You wouldn't do it with younger grades, probably.
Yeah. Very good. Any other ideas for spare time projects?
I keep my students supplied with sketchbooks, and they've really gotten under that, some of them.
Some students,
artists.
Yes, some students will definitely grab a blank piece of paper and occupy themselves with being creative, and that is challenging, and it's very, you look at, you know, how many little boys with a crayon need to be told that you need to do something with that. I mean, that they can usually find a wall somewhere. So, yeah.
My sister took that old sewing machine to school and had it take apart and get it working again.
Okay, I highly recommend that anyone who plans on getting married should do that. Take a sewing machine apart and put it back together at school. Because I tried it after I was married and it didn't work. So, anyway, yeah.
Electrical snap circuits are a lot of fun.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And it's educational, too.
Yeah, so working with electrical snap circuits. Very good. Okay. Yes. And I think that's there's a whole that's a whole another subject almost. Rather than having the students be challenged by learning something for themselves, the students can also experience the joy of helping others, whether it's helping a lower grade classroom or even doing something some special job for the teacher. Sometimes I have special jobs that need to be done, such as hanging up art, taking down a bulletin board, or putting one up. Those are things that students can find rewarding. It still is a challenge because it's something most of them haven't, you know, maybe they haven't done it yet, or, you know, it's touching someone else's art and trying to get it straight on the wall has its own challenges and so on. Very good. Anything else?
Are you familiar with the extreme dot to dot? Like there's 1,000 dots in one picture.
Okay. Okay. That's leading into something that I love, which is, and this is another overarching umbrella, of brain teasers. Extreme dot-to-dot, I think, is definitely, it takes a student out of the box of reading a book and learning something from a book, as it were. You're learning something by experiencing it, more or less. Some of you may be familiar with the nine-dot brain teaser. These nine dots, you can draw four lines without picking up your pencil, four straight lines, I have to say this right. You can draw four straight lines without picking up your pencil and go through all nine of those dots. As far as I know, there's only one way to do that. You can keep thinking about that as I go along. This is one I brought along, and somebody helped me out with it, so it is actually not in its original form. It turns into a cube. Any volunteers to turn it back into a cube? It is not a cube at the moment. All right. Okay, you can try. The whole thing is the student can try, and with a brain teaser like this, typically, he will experience some level of success. He may not completely be able to get it, but he will probably learn a few things. And children with their hands and moving things, that type of brain teaser is very useful in a classroom.
I had a couple of Rubik's cubes.
Yes.
On the desk of students who've used, and had one in particular. He spent hours with the Rubik's cubes.
Yes.
And then he eventually showed up one day. He showed up to school with some bigger Rubik's cubes, some more complicated ones.
Okay. So the Rubik's Cube can be another useful. There again, you're challenging their brain without necessarily using books and written material. It's amazing how sometimes students who may not excel so much in regular classroom work can excel with some of these other types of things. All right, let's move on here just a little bit. Along with the longer projects that can be helpful for spare time. One thing that I found very useful is long-term art projects. For example, string art. String art takes most of a school year to get it done if you're going to do a big project that's worthwhile. But my students who have done that often have that. It's something you take home and you can keep, and it works. We've also done rope art or used barbed wire. If you need instructions on how to do that, I can give you that to you later. But these types of art projects are time-consuming. They involve multiple days of working on them. And when the students have spare time, they can pick that up and keep going. Currently, I'm teaching a rather involved drawing course. And so most of my students, upper grade students, as they have spare time, they'll work on these pictures that they're drawing, many of which will take probably upwards of 10 to 15 hours per picture. So they're not going to do it in one art lesson. Wood burning is another thing that we've done. There again, that takes time consuming. Girls may enjoy knitting, cross-stitching projects at school. I can remember those fads coming through and fizzling out. But nonetheless, they kept ladies engaged at least for a while in something productive in their spare time. Question 6, how should we deal with dreary days? What do you do the first time you get a pouring rainy day and everybody shows up droopy? Or what do you do in February?
With my younger students, I let them bring their toys to school. Like the boys brought their trucks and tractors and farm everything.
Okay, so bringing some toys to school.
We had Toy Day.
Toy Day. Very good. All right. And that can be educational, seeing what other toys other people have. You can become jealous of them and try to earn them. No. But you can learn how to ride someone else's bike or their ripstick or whatever and so on. I think that is a good thing. We did something similar to that last year, and it was a good thing.
That's changing at all, but if you look along with it, sometimes just telling the students any given time throughout the period, every period of the day, one has studied a single verse of one song.
Okay. Okay.
That keeps them on.
Yes. Yes. Have you ever experienced students who just seem lethargic on some of these days? Are you aware that that one of the main problems is that they need exercise? I find it rather challenging sometimes when we're having rainy day after rainy day to get my students to get some exercise. Not that they don't want exercise, but it's hard to find ways to do it. Sometimes you just simply have to tell them we're going to do so many jumping jacks for a while or whatever. Or sometimes they tell me when they want to exercise sitting down. They have a volunteer. Derek, okay, Austin, come on up here. We're going to have Austin volunteer to demonstrate how you can exercise sitting down. And this shouldn't hurt your toe.
Okay.
So I'm just going to demonstrate for him. The way you do this is simply go into a sitting position against the wall and then maintain that sitting position. We're going to let you go until the last bell rings, so you can hope it's not too long. All right. Those who enjoy exercising sitting down, find this. You want your knees perpendicular to your hips, so just like that. Yes. And to rest, you can cross one leg over the other. All right. But on a rainy day, you can do this, and they're sitting there, and we're all around the room, and usually about this time they start talking and moaning and groaning, and it's enjoyable exercise. They start watching the clock ticking down. Is it already a minute? And things like that. Exercise is paramount. It really is on these types of dreary days. What about things that you could do for people in the community or church people? Are there things that can help your students look outside of themselves on some of these days? What about going to sing for a widow? We've done that, and it's rewarding. The students like to, I'm surprised, they think it's work to get ready for a program, but if we were getting ready to go sing for someone's grandma, that was exciting. You know, that's good. That's good stuff. You don't actually have to stay there. You know. Simple things like a lunch exchange. That could be educational, learning what other people eat for lunch or what they enjoy, and so on. And it doesn't interrupt. It's not disorderly as far as that goes. One thing we do often in February, if it's not too busy, we started having a pancake supper. And found that to be exciting. The children having a chance to serve their parents and other people from the community, that's enjoyable. And one thing we do on the first rainy day of every school year is that we have a celebration of the first rainy day. And so it makes it kind of an exciting event. We drink hot cocoa. And from then on, occasionally, on rainy days, they get hot cocoa during story time. And it makes them feel a little special. And they almost sometimes beg for rain. So, very good. Once again, students who face challenges and experience success in your classroom won't be bored. Thank you for your help.